In the studio this morning, I have Roger Spiller, who obtained his doctorate in this field and spent the last 15 years specializing in social responsibility and sustainably conscious investing. Roger has been devoting his life to bringing this concept into mainstream investing in New Zealand and Australia, and now has a vast experience of the many ways we can involve ourselves with investing for our retirement, as well as just feeling comfortable and at ease knowing that one's wealth is being used consciously for the betterment of the community and the planet as a whole. So good morning, Roger. Glad you could come in.
Good morning, Tim. Thanks for the invitation. Great to be here.
Lovely. So what is ethical and sustainable and responsible investments?
It's about an individual applying their personal ethical principles to the investment of their capital to achieve a triple bottom line. It's about the economic, the social, and the environmental, sometimes known as the people, the planet, and the profit elements. So bringing all those together in an integrated way in which people can do well and do good.
Uh-huh. And what is the history of this?
Well, it really started off with the churches who wanted to avoid, on the one hand, being at the pulpit on Sunday espousing certain ethical principles. You mentioned before about things like tobacco and gambling and alcohol, and on the other hand, having their very vast wealth invested in those very things. So they decided that they would divest from those areas that they were telling the congregation not to get involved in. And then it moved on in the 60s in the US, where we had the peace portfolios, where families were looking at their children going off to Vietnam and thinking they didn't want to fund the armaments industry. In the 70s, South African divestment was a key issue, so Nelson Mandela and others had called for investors to not invest in companies that were doing business in South Africa, and he attributed that to a significant part of the reason for changing the apartheid regime. And then in the 80s, we had the Wall Street Green, so here you had mainstream investment professionals who were increasingly taking on these environmental concerns. And today it's really become quite a mainstream development, and the most recent initiative in that regard is the United Nations Principles of Responsible Investing. They were launched in April, and they've got the support of global financial institutions with over $4 trillion US dollars in funds under management. And that includes our very own New Zealand Superannuation Fund, which all of the listeners have got some vested interest in, and that's signed up for those principles.
Roger, you've covered a number of the ethical issues. Can you take this a little bit further for us as to why people would really want to do something here?
Well, for many individuals, there's a desire to vote with their money, to have it make a difference in creating the kind of world that they want to live in and they want their children and children's children to live in. So whilst there's the traditional sin stocks, the avoidance, perhaps someone might not want to avoid a tobacco company or a gambling company, armaments, there's other social issues that people are very concerned about, things like human rights. We would have examples these days of many of our clients wanting to avoid investing in child labour activities. There's been a lot of controversy around the Asian sweatshops and what goes on there. The labour relations areas, so things like unions, employee rights, and how they're managed by companies. The idea of companies being good corporate citizens, really contributing to and providing resources back into the community, and of course the environmental concerns. And when we've looked back over the last few years and things like Enron and WorldCom and all those disasters in terms of corporate governance within mainstream business, many people now are saying that it's just smart investment, even if you don't have strong ethical principles that you want necessarily to be included, that just when you're thinking about how you're going to invest, it's wise to take account of these environmental and social issues. And mainstream investment research organisations like Mercer, who are a big consultancy organisation globally, and they help people with vast amounts of money to decide what they're going to invest in, they're now building these criteria in. So even mainstream investors are taking them on board because they know it's going to be better for the bottom line.
And why should people then, well, how do they do it? How do they get involved?
Okay. Well, as an individual, the process is usually best done within the context of a personal financial plan or a personal investment plan. And that involves starting off by looking at where you are now, taking stock, if you like, thinking about your balance sheet, your assets and your liabilities, your net worth, thinking about your income and expenditure, the cash flowing in, the cash flowing out of your life, and thinking about your goals and your aspirations and where you're wanting to be, and then developing a plan to get from where you are now to where you want to be. And oftentimes that's going to involve some saving and some investment and wise investment. If you've already got investments, it's going to involve running the ruler over them and checking out that they really line up with your ethical criteria. That process is easiest done by talking to an investment advisor that specialises in this area, that has expertise in the planning process and can help you with all the technical aspects of that, which range from really understanding the underlying investments and the economic environment to think about tax issues and other wider financial planning issues like estate planning and things like that that ought to be taken into account. So people like myself specialise in that area. There's a group called the Ethical Investment Association, and that's operating in New Zealand and Australia. It's www.eia.org.nz, and that's a non-profit group where listeners can go on and check out a whole lot of information about ethical investment, but also learn about the process of working with an advisor. Either working through an advisor or working directly, they can access a whole range of investment opportunities, and those investment opportunities range from community-based investments, cash, fixed interest investments, and organisations locally like Prometheus have a range of those, through to investing in the share market. You can invest locally in shares that have taken these criteria into account through a managed fund, for example, like Astron have the Socially Responsible Investment Trust, which we're involved with through our organisation, which is rogerspiller.com. People can read about that on www.rogerspiller.com. And then there's a range of Australian organisations like Australian Ethical Investment and Hunter Hall that have funds here. And then there's more funds further afield. Or you could invest directly into particular companies or particular activities that you want to support.
Fairly recently, the Sunday Times did an article on socially responsible investing. And can you tell us, Roger, what they came up with?
What they found was that New Zealanders were willing to accept reduced returns to invest ethically, which is something that they don't actually need to do. They can do if they choose to. And of the 71 investors who took part in the survey, the practices that they were keenest to support were sustainable land use, and that was followed by sustainable energy and resource use and fair labour practices. The only areas where the Kiwis felt more strongly than the Australians were in their opposition to tobacco companies, genetically modified food production, firms engaging in repressive enterprises, and alcohol production. By contrast, Australians valued reforestation more highly than New Zealand ethical investors, and sort of speculating on the reasons for that, but perhaps because of the large areas of forest cover here. Although somewhat bemusing that Kiwis were showing less opposition than Australians to old growth logging. This survey, which used a template from Australian Ethical Investment, was also on the back of recent research from the Retirement Commission in New Zealand. And there, amongst other questions, New Zealanders were asked how important it was for them to take account of environmental and social factors when making investment decisions. And 71% of people said it was very important for them to do that. So it's interesting that on the one hand, we've got lots of people who say that they're interested, and I'm imagining that a number of people listening to this program think, gee, that's a jolly good idea, you know, investing in this way, doing well and doing good, you know, why not? But in actual fact, there aren't that many people who are following through and putting their money where their mouth is. So there's quite a challenge for the ethical investment community to encourage people to learn more about this and then to actually take the step of investing.
We had trust banks in New Zealand, and of course now I guess Taranaki Savings Bank is one that stands out. Have they got a portfolio totally devoted to what we'd call as ethical finance? Or?
No, really the main players in New Zealand are Prometheus, who are based in the Hawke's Bay. They're an organisation that's been the longest standing provider of solutions, and people can learn about them on www.prometheus.co.nz. They've got a range of savings and investment accounts where people can direct their money to particular areas like education, art, holistic healthcare, sustainable agriculture, the environment. And they've also got new accounts which are paying relatively high rates of interest compared with their other accounts. They've got an Earth Saver, a Climate Saver, and a Super Saver. So you can save the world and save money at the same time. And we could explore, you know, some of the particular investments that those monies that have been deposited with Prometheus have made possible. And one that many people would probably be familiar with is the Clean Green Car Company. And there you've got that organisation bringing in cars from typically Japan, Toyota Prius, for example, selling them for prices between $18,000 and $30,000, making them more affordable than those new car prices. And Prometheus has provided finance for that company so they can hold a higher stock levels and meet the rising demand that's been experienced as more and more people switch on to that clean green car technology. And of course, rising petrol prices have helped to facilitate that shift as well. Another example of the way in which this type of finance builds a stronger community is that Prometheus has been closely involved in the Earthsong Common House project out in the Waitakere's, and there they've provided funding to enable that second stage to advance, and they've already out there built 17 eco houses, so 14 more in the process currently. So it's encouraging to see Prometheus at work at the grassroots, if you like. And then there's the share market type investments, and one can invest in those locally in Australia and internationally. And we could talk some more about some examples there.
Yes. Can you hear more? I'd like to mention the power companies and, of course, with the big windmills.
Yes. Well, Australian Ethical Investment's got a very interesting portfolio of companies that they've supported, and one of those areas is renewable energy that they focus on. A couple of examples there. We've got an organisation called Energy Developments Limited that's based in Queensland. So here's a company that this fund takes money that people have invested with it and does research about which are the most appropriate underlying companies, looking at their financials and then looking at their environmental and social performance. And in this context, Energy Developments is engaged in the development and management of an international portfolio of projects with a focus on renewable energy and innovation and waste solutions. They've got power plants that are providing greenhouse gas emission reductions to approximately 10 million tonnes per year of carbon dioxide, so a really significant contribution being made there. Another organisation, Advanced Energy Systems, based in Perth, power and communication technologies for commercial and renewable energy applications that efficiently convert direct current from batteries to the alternating current that most appliances demand. So they've got a focus on providing their technology to countries in the developing world as well as in remote parts of Australia. So you get companies like that who are making a difference, and then they've got a whole span through from waste management, where they've got a Tasmanian trash transformers who are getting involved in literally that grassroots activity, through to healthcare and wellbeing, and familiar names like Blackmores or Fisher & Paykel Healthcare, OPSM, companies within their portfolio that are really making quite a strong contribution. And we can also look internationally at the kinds of companies that are being invested in, and one of the themes that fund managers are using is this idea of industries of the future. So the thesis being that if we understand the future and the way the future is evolving, and we can invest now in those things that are going to be in greater demand in the future, then obviously we're going to be doing better off financially as investors, and of course we're also going to make a difference environmentally and socially. So one area that they focus on is clean energy, and in that context, looking at the increasing focus on climate change and energy security, the G8 governments have established national targets to generate at least 25% of electricity from renewable energy sources by 2025. So this organisation who's funding these initiatives is focusing on wind, solar and fuel cells, as well as emissions reduction in order to make that impact. Another key area is water management, in which they're investing. According to the UN, there's 1.1 billion people that lack access to clean drinking water, and 2.6 billion people, that's half the developing world, don't have proper sanitation. So there's a huge need to remedy that, and it's created opportunities for companies that widen access to clean water by operating infrastructure systems or through new purification technologies. And water conservation and water and wastewater services are also significant investment opportunities. So we're literally, addressing the global problems that we're all concerned about by investing and making the business enterprise happen that's going to address those problems as profitable opportunities. Another area that's pretty fundamental is the area of transportation. And one of the specific examples of interim technology, technology that's sort of moving us along the line to truly sustainable transport, is the Toyota Prius, and one of the companies in the portfolio develops software to manage onboard electrical power and also develops smaller long-life batteries for hybrid vehicles. That's called Azure Dynamics. So again, by investing in this international fund, this one's offered by Jupiter, you get to invest in those kinds of activities. And the ultimate technology they're looking at is hydrogen, and they've got a zero-emission vehicle. They're looking to have that powered by a fuel cell running on hydrogen produced from a non-fossil fuel source. And Quantum Fuel Systems develop storage mechanisms and electronic control systems for alternative energy and hydrogen fuel power. So what we can see both globally and locally is that there are these themes of investing in the future that enable investors to have an approach which is going to enable them to meet their personal ethical goals and also their financial requirements.
It's like an awakening, really, as the financial concerns are saying, right, look, we're coming up to a future that we don't particularly want to have thrust in front of our children. How can we bring through these new sunrise industries, I guess you would call them? And this is lovely to hear, because 25 years ago, you wouldn't have heard anything about this, really, would you?
No, we've been friends for about that long, and I think in the early days it's been pretty tough going to really have people take into account these kinds of issues. And Prometheus has been around for about 20 years, and they really did quite hard yards early on, but now they're growing quite well. And I think one of the challenges is to have a better awareness of what's happening within the wider investment world. So this Ethical Investment Association that I mentioned before, they've got a strategy of having people understand what the options are in terms of investment. They've developed the symbol, which is a bit like the Health Foundation's health tick, and this is a symbol that's going on the investment statements of fund managers, going on the brochures of financial advisors like myself, and it's going to enable the public to be able to differentiate between those that are committed to this area and really taking it seriously and those that are perhaps just doing a sort of greenwash thing around it. So there's training requirements, there's quality standards, there's a need to demonstrate in an independently audited manner that the investments that are being made meet a strong ethical charter. So both locally and internationally, what we're seeing is that these kinds of initiatives of increasing consumer awareness are playing a pretty important part in the overall picture. The other thing that's really interesting, Tim, is that the financial performance of these portfolios is demonstrating that you can do well by doing good, that there isn't a trade-off, which is what people have traditionally thought, between ethics on the one hand and profit on the other. So you can have both and rather than either or.
Of course, usually with new things we might have asked for government to support, but here it's a standalone, isn't it? Just savvy business people who have sort of a deeper understanding of the connectedness of nature and environment are just putting these processes into the flow.
Yes, it's really enlightened self-interest, on the part of business people, and we've seen some great developments locally with the development, first of all, of Businesses for Social Responsibility, when Dick Hubbard led the charge and I was involved with him there. And that's morphed into the Sustainable Business Network, which is now a key organisation working with businesses in New Zealand, and that includes the Environmental Business Network. And at the bigger end of town, the New Zealand Business Council for Sustainable Development, both of which the organisations have websites, people can learn more about there. And there's a lot of business activity that's taking place to really encourage their peers, if you like, to get more engaged. What we see from the New Zealand government is that in the legislation for the New Zealand Superannuation Fund, they built in a requirement around ethical investment. So that is a way of, if you like, focusing the minds around how can we go about doing this and developing at the Superfund a charter, which is being progressed in terms of having this ethical investment focus. And internationally, I mentioned before the UN principles of responsible investing, there's now a carbon disclosure project. So the big investors around the world, the big managed funds and superannuation funds, are requiring of companies that they disclose their carbon emissions. And if they don't do the disclosure, then they're out of the portfolio. So, a particular CEO might, have his or her own views about carbon or climate change and what have you, but when the big investors come along and say, we expect this of you or we're not going to invest, then they tend to act and act pretty quickly. So that's been great to see that develop and being taken from the US, Europe, UK and brought down to Australia and shortly into New Zealand. The Association of British Insurers have a requirement there that their investments are having that level of disclosure. There's an investor group on climate change, the International Governance Network, and we're now seeing about $21 trillion of money internationally invested in specific initiatives that are taking account of these carbon developments. So it doesn't just require, you know, government doing its thing. It requires, you know, mainstream business and, in particular, fund managers encouraged by individual investors like our listeners, you know, sort of knocking on the door of the big fund managers, talking to their financial advisors and asking them about this. And, you know, if they get a bit of a blank stare or get told that it's all too hard and there aren't options available and so on and so forth, then the time has come to say, well, you know, I've been listening to the radio, there are options, and how about this, how about that?
It's really starting to snowball, isn't it? It's nearly exponential, the wave is coming through, and I think it's extremely encouraging. Now, how about universities and the MBA? Are they including that in the, what you call the syllabus of learning in this day and age, sort of conscious investing and ethical ways in business?
Slowly but surely, that's coming into the mainstream of investment management education at universities. We've got a conference coming up in New Zealand where a person who's speaking at it lectures on a course on sustainable investment at the University of Toronto. And her name is Jane Abernash, and she's the principal of Mercer Consulting in Canada. And what she's doing is teaching the next generation of investment managers about these things and why they are important, and increasingly also working with the existing generation and telling them about these elements. The University of Auckland has been looking at this area, and I reflect back on my studies. First up, you know, my accounting degree some 20-odd years ago. Back then, it wasn't until the final module of the final paper that we had this aspect of accounting for corporate social responsibility. So I took it on myself to go out and do a big project, and I found one company at that time who was reporting on this. And these days you're hard pressed to find a company that isn't. So, you know, things have really moved along quite nicely. And we see that in terms of the broader education area, Management Magazine have an initiative with Deloitte where each year they have business ethics awards, and we've been developing that with them. We're now in our 8th year of those awards, and people can learn about that by looking at the website for the New Zealand Centre for Business Ethics and Sustainable Development, another one of these terrible acronyms, but www.nzcbesd.org.nz. And on there, there's now 24 case studies of finalists and winners over the years in these awards. I recently wrote an article for a management magazine talking about this, encouraging entries in this current year's awards. And what we see in that context is business people really taking on the challenge of stepping up to the mark and entering for the awards. And the winners in recent years have said to me that that's the award amongst all the awards that are offered in business that they most want to win, because it's really an award that is for all their people and for their reputation, you know, as an organisation in terms of what they can do. There's a lot of guest lecturing that I've been doing within the universities to talk about this, and I think that what we're seeing now is this next generation coming through, Generation Y, who are saying that they want to work for organisations that have a focus on social responsibility. They don't want to have to sort of mutter under their breath about what company they work for when their mates ask them. They want to be able to sort of stand tall and proud and say, well, you know, I'm going to work, and it's not just about getting a paycheck, it's about making a difference. So what you find is that companies that are winning business ethics awards, companies that are rated highly by ethical investors, are companies where people really want to work for and where the other stakeholders involved in the mix, so not just thinking about the customers and the employees, which is the sort of traditional focus, but also thinking about the community as a whole, thinking about the environment, thinking about suppliers, and thinking about the shareholders, then all of those stakeholders can work together for a common good, and that's really the way in which the world is moving.
You have a funny story relating to that, when it was first initiated. Can you tell us that?
Yes, actually, it's something I was cheeky enough to include in the article that I wrote for Management Magazine. And I wrote that when the Business Ethics Award was unveiled at the 1999 Deloitte Management Magazine Top 200 Awards, and here was the annual event, you had 700 business people there in their penguin suits, you know, all, it's like school prize giving, you know, best chief executive, best chairman, best company strategy, so on and so forth. And the MC stood up and said, "This year we're going to have a Business Ethics Award." And there was just a roar of laughter. You know, people were talking about, "Hey, this is an oxymoron, man. You know, what a joke." And I was quite stunned because, you know, I'm used to hanging out with some of my deep green mates who would think business ethics is an oxymoron, but, you know, from the other perspective. And here were the business leaders themselves actually questioning the place of ethics. And I think that a sign of the times is how things have changed so dramatically over that period, helped by these various initiatives, so that it is now a really coveted award and something that's a pretty critical focus. What we're also seeing, Tim, and what's somewhat related to that, is the way in which the expectations of businesses have shifted from the regulators. And I spent 4 years on the Securities Commission. And in 2004, the Commission published a report on corporate governance in New Zealand and the principles and guidelines that are expected of businesses. And the first of those principles was business ethics. So an expectation, you know, that businesses are going to address these issues, and a need for directors to observe and foster high ethical standards. And we also talked about the importance of constructive stakeholder relations and ensuring that business people were recognising the importance of these different stakeholders and bring them into the mix in terms of their approach. And since then, the Commission's been monitoring the reports of companies in New Zealand and looking at their performance, and has seen quite a shift up as an organisation as powerful as the Commission makes a strong statement to the business community that these are expectations that it has. There's obviously further room to go. And I think a key aspect of all of this is that we're not talking about a search for perfection. It's a continuous improvement aspect. I was struck by a conversation I had many years ago with Ray Anderson, who's the chairman of Interface Carpets, and many listeners will probably have seen the movie The Corporation, which I'd say gives a pretty bad rap, you know, on business as such. But there's Ray Anderson in the movie lecturing to the business community about what's possible, and he spoke to me about the need to be a restorative enterprise. That is, that his business, Interface Carpets, would put more back into the environment and the community than it was taking out. And he described that as a huge challenge, and he thought it was interesting that I came from New Zealand. This was at a conference in Mexico, and he was saying to me that the challenge is really one that's greater than climbing Everest. But he thought that, you know, as Kiwis, we ought to be up for the task.
How do you get companies involved to want to get involved in sustainability and do their best?
I think one of the key things is to demonstrate to them the business case, that they can do well by doing good. And whilst the song was playing, we were talking offline about South Africa and the United Nations World Summit on Sustainable Development, which I was fortunate to attend as the New Zealand business representative back in 2002. And what was fascinating there was that the business community was really leading the charge with the NGOs and non-governmental organisations, and encouraging and challenging governments to up the ante, you know, sign up for the Kyoto Protocol, to get engaged with serious climate change initiatives. So you've actually got a whole group of business people who internationally recognise this and are providing examples and demonstrating that they do know, you know, how to do this, and it's quite practical and it's smart business. So what I was doing in my doctoral research was studying those types of businesses and looking at the businesses that were rated most highly by the ethical investors. And whilst at the time there was discussion about how most of us intuitively have a bit of an idea of what a socially responsible business is, no one had systematically gone about the process of putting all the different pieces of the puzzle together into a coherent whole. So what I developed was a framework which I call the four P's. And this is a model that we talk about on my website, that rogerspiller.com site. But in essence, it's looking at the purpose of the business, the principles that it applies, the practices in those different stakeholder groups, and then how does it measure its performance. And so as investors, we go to companies and we provide them with this feedback, these scorecards on those four P's, and say, well, these are the areas where we're giving you a bouquet, we're pat on the back, good job. Maybe a business ethics award, going back to our earlier discussion. But here's some areas of concern, some areas where we can see that if you could make improvements, you could do well financially, and you could also do well in terms of the community and the environment. So just to explore some of that in a little bit more detail and to look at the kind of process that we work through, in thinking about the purpose of a business, we think in terms of creating wealth, which is what business is very good at doing, but not just economic wealth. This triple bottom line idea that the ethical investors are looking for of environmental, social and economic wealth creation. And it's interesting looking at how business people have seen this evolve over time. The chairman of Canon recently spoke about the evolution of business and said that it started off, you know, industrial revolution, you know, purely capitalistic, although you could say that was 1987, you know, the Wall Street movie, you know, greed is good, greed works. And then there's been this sort of sense of shared destiny, that we're all in this together, community awareness, and now for many businesses, a sense of service to humankind. So, you know, why do we go to work? Why do we do what we do? It's about making a difference. And sure, you have to make money, but it's a bit like breathing. You know, you have to breathe in order to live, but you don't live in order to breathe. So, yes, you have to make a profit in order to be in business, but you're not in business just to make a profit. No margin, no mission, but there is a bigger mission there. So then, having thought about the purpose, and we really encourage companies to state that very clearly, we then turn to thinking about the principles that are involved. And these are the beliefs that guide the company's actions. And what we do as investors is encourage companies to really explicitly state and follow a clear set of principles that reflect core values and virtues. So there isn't a definitive list around this, but when I went off to do my research, they sent me off to the philosophy department. I was pretty comfortable with the finance and the management departments and those aspects of my research. But in terms of philosophy, we delve back into the Aristotelian view of life. And way back when, Aristotle was saying, well, you know, the good life looks like having ethics and excellence. It looks like being a good citizen and what the characteristics of that citizen were. And you can take characteristics like honesty, fairness, caring, courage, and then say, well, what would that look like if we applied it to a company in today's era? And we can see the same things at work. We can see companies who are demonstrating those virtues, and we can look at the way in which they're doing that. And the way in which we look to see whether they're walking the talk, they might have listed a set of virtues or values on their annual report or on the wall of the office or whatever, but the real test where the rubber hits the road is in the practices. What are they doing on a day-to-day basis? So there we look at the application of the purpose and principles in terms of the different stakeholder groups and look to test those initiatives. So we can explore some of those, and if I just go back to the Business Ethics Awards, if we look in the environmental area, one company that's done particularly well is Honda. Honda have been influencing customers in the wider community to act in an environmentally responsible way. Their research showed that concern for the environment ranked 20 out of 20 for most new car customers. So they implemented a major environmental campaign which managed to shift that concern for the environment up to fourth. And that's reflected in the new car sales now in terms of the Honda hybrids and others benefiting from that. All of Honda's new cars that are sold in New Zealand fall within the low emissions vehicle requirements. And the petrol electric Civic hybrid falls within the ultra low emission vehicle requirements. And they told me recently they're completely sold out and now have to wait till February next year before we can get one of these. So huge demand coming through for them. They've got a national tree fund program. They're donating funding for 13 native trees for every new Honda sold, and that's providing a natural solution to the air pollution caused by motor vehicle emissions. So with Honda and the other companies that are rated highly by ethical investors and reflect in the Business Ethics Awards, we're seeing examples of organisations that really are walking the talk. And what we look to as the fourth P is this concept of performance measurement, so that a company will report on its performance, encouraging sustainable development and how they've impacted on their stakeholders, and then also what they're committing to do in terms of that continuous improvement of how they're demonstrating that they are going to be able to continue to earn that license to operate, which all businesses ultimately require if they want to continue in business.
And there's also an indigenous quality as well, is that right?
Yeah, that's evolving pretty rapidly, and it's fascinating to look at what's happening in Australia with the Aboriginal community. And I think there's a lot of interest amongst Māori in New Zealand to develop this here. What we've seen in Australia is that microfinance, this is lending money, relatively small amounts of money, to community-based initiatives and micro-enterprise, so it's beyond small business to tiny businesses, they're being implemented by charities, by government and the corporate sector, and the idea is to help Indigenous communities to break the welfare cycle and gain true independence, and they provide business mentoring and related skills to ensure economic and social benefits are maximised. So there's a range of programs that have been happening in Australia. One of the key ones is the Indigenous Enterprise Partnerships, and that's a not-for-profit organisation which is channeling corporate and philanthropic resources into Indigenous development. And it's got partners, organisations like the Westpac Bank, the Body Shop, the Boston Consulting Group, and they're getting together to build the capacity of Indigenous communities, build skills. They've got a significant resource commitment there. They've got 50 employees from all levels of the bank who are engaged with it. And what they're also doing there is working with families to manage their income and increase their financial literacy. There's a range of programs in Indigenous communities around budgeting, paying bills, savings, in the Northern Territory and Western Australia, and there's interest in the New Zealand context as well. There's a Minister for Indigenous Affairs in Australia announced that the government would be providing $4.4 million over 4 years to fund local service providers to recruit and train Indigenous workers to provide intensive money management support to Indigenous families and individuals to build their money management capacity. So what we're looking at now in a local context is the way in which Indigenous folks can take on board these skills, and oftentimes they're demonstrating a great deal of interest. I was doing work with the Retirement Commissioner around the financial literacy program in New Zealand, and this involved in part going to schools and teaching young people about money. And part of the children's homework was to go home and talk to mum and dad about their budget. And that really focused the mind for a few parents who didn't have a budget. They had to do their own homework. But Ngāi Tahu down in South Island have really taken this to heart, and they've implemented it quite extensively. And now, as we develop the whole area of ethical investment, when we look at the large amount of funds that these Māori groups oftentimes have from treaty settlements and the like, how can they invest that in a wise way? And oftentimes these principles of sustainable investment and environmental and social responsibility are very aligned with those natural values that they're wanting to utilise, so there's opportunities at that level as well. So I think what we're seeing is a convergence of interest from many dimensions around finance to see that Indigenous peoples are really getting the empowerment that their economic power is providing as a possibility, rather than just seeing that money lost.
This is very encouraging, extremely encouraging. Roger, and where is the future of sustainable investing going? Because it's obviously on a roll.
It really is quite exciting, I think, and what we're seeing in the 21st century is a shift in world views for many people, the coming of age of the baby boomers and all the attitude changes that that's bringing. Climate change has climbed to the top of the issues confronting the planet, and there's been enormous corporate collapses, so people really thinking that business as usual isn't an option. Increasing demand and supply of transparency and disclosure and corporate regulation. There's an organisation I'm involved with called Transparency International, and looking all around the world, including from New Zealand, helping out in the Pacific with this whole area of transparency and having people know where the money is going, including from aid programs and the like, and seeing that that is really going to where it ought to be. We're seeing transparency at a business level. We're seeing individuals as consumers having increasing amounts of choice and voting with their money, so choosing to buy products from those companies that have the better environmental and social performance. Increasing activism, where people are really engaging. You know, we have seen the corporation, you know, we have seen the battle in Seattle. There's a lot of criticism, you know, against conventional business and a need for those businesses to respond and demonstrate that they are worthy, you know, of that support in terms of customer support or investor support. And ethical investment brings all these aspects together. So it enables the individual investor in the 21st century to achieve congruence with their personal values. You can sit down and think, what is the kind of world I want to be living in, and my children, my children's children to be living in, and what are the things that I want to have my money supporting? What do I want to vote for with my investments? And wherever your money is invested, you know, no matter how large or small, it is having an impact. Do you know what impact it's having? if you don't, you really need to find out if you're serious about this idea of making a difference. And the challenge is to plan for your financial future, to leave a legacy that's not just money, but also good impacts in terms of environmental and social impact, to do well and do good. So I'd encourage listeners to get a personal ethical investment plan. If they've already got an investment plan for their lives, to really scrutinise that in terms of its performance around environmental, social and economic criteria. To save and invest ethically, and to refer and tell their friends, you know, about this concept. And there's plenty of resource information out there now about the area. I mentioned the website for the Ethical Investment Association, eia.org.nz. There's rogerspiller.com. And in those websites, you'll find a whole range of other resources and media information that can enable you to learn more about a concept whose time has indeed come.
Yeah, excellent, Rog. And New Zealand, where does New Zealand go? Can we be a leader?
Absolutely, and I think that in many ways the New Zealand Superannuation Fund is being looked at internationally as a potential leader and ally. We've got the Chief Executive, Paul Costello, going across to the Ethical Investment Association conference in Sydney in October, because people are really interested to look at an organisation of that size, those billions of dollars, having this ethical charter, and how they're going to go about doing that. They're teaming up with similar organisations around the world to take on board these criteria and to influence business with that economic power that they've got. I think we see organisations like Prometheus, who are at the leading edge of community finance, you know, the great initiatives like Earth Song, like the Clean Green Car Company that I mentioned before. If you investigate, you know, what Prometheus is doing, they're really funding the kinds of community initiatives that I think you've espoused on this program and seeking to make that happen. And it's not going to happen unless people invest in these things. It's not just sort of magically developed. And money is just such a powerful influence in terms of having the world the way we want it to be. And then at the share market end of town, if investors can signal through investing with investment advisors and fund managers that are focused on this area, send a signal to the underlying businesses that this is something that they want taken seriously, then I'm absolutely sure that the New Zealand business community is up for the challenge. There's a lot of good work going on already. I mentioned the Sustainable Business Network, the New Zealand Business Council for Sustainable Development, the Centre for Business Ethics and Sustainable Development on the education front. And I think that as a small country, and in the past we've been seen to punch above our weight in terms of like the nuclear issue, in terms of other global challenges, and in this area we really can make a difference, and it's just up to all of us to take action and to, you know, make our money vote for it.
Well, Kiwis can is an old word, isn't it? And I think it's important that we show some sort of moral inclination here to lead, because deep down, we want to be out there, don't we?
Absolutely, and it's all very well to kind of talk about what others ought to be doing, and you know, it's great being an activist and marching up and down the street, or, you know, writing letters to the paper or whatever, but if one's own money is in fact invested in the activities that you're protesting against, you sort of go right back to those original roots of the ethical investment movement, those churches and their sin stocks and the sort of contradiction that they had at play, and you think, well, how am I going to get this congruence happening in my life? What am I going to do in order to ensure that the things that I care about are reflected in everything I do?